Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and my co-host is with me today, Christine Kisara Dennett, my sister-in-law. Say hi, Christy.
Hello, everybody.
Okay, tonight we have a really exciting show. I have a guest. His name is Robert Stanley. He's the author of UFOs Over or Close Encounter on Capitol Hill. And before I actually introduce him, I just want to start our little five-minute news segment here. I've got some really exciting new events that have been occurring. One really interesting event is about the planet Pluto. Did you hear what happened, Christy?
No, I didn't hear about this.
Pluto is no longer a planet. It lost its planet status. Now there is only 9 planets.
Why?
Or 8 planets, actually, in our solar system. It's actually a big controversy. It turns out there is another planet outside of Pluto. I guess it would be the 10th planet, right?
Uh-huh. And, I heard about that.
It was the same size or very close to the same size as Pluto. And there was indications that there were other planets out there. And so what was happening is the astronomy books were going to have to constantly be revised to add these planets. So instead of doing that, they just decided a planet has to be a certain size. So it's a big controversy because most scientists think that a planet is a planet if it's round, if it has enough gravity to collapse into itself. But, oh well, Pluto's been gypped. So that's pretty interesting. And another little bit of news is there's a lot of new paranormal magazines coming out, which I think people would be very interested in. One is called Paranormal Magazine. This is actually published in the UK, in England. But you can get it online under paranormalmagazine.com, I believe, is the website. Anyway, it's a great magazine. It's slick. It's got lots of pages and really a lot of interesting variety of stories. There was one in the recent issue about this lady who was driving down the street and she saw a Roman soldier, right? And he was in full gear. But his legs were all tore up. They were bleeding, and he was injured, badly injured. And as she drove by, she realized, you know, this is kind of out of place. It turns out it was a ghost. So it was a really interesting article.
It sounds like a ghost. Didn't she saw it in Rome?
No, this was in England, actually.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. But there's some interesting UFO news, too. John Schussler, who is the director of MUFON, which is the Mutual UFO Network, the world's largest UFO organization that's run by civilians. He's stepping down from his position. He's held it for like 5 years or so, and he's being replaced by James Carrion. So this might cause some changes in the whole MUFON scene. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But it's crazy. You know, when I started doing this show, I wanted to bring UFO news and the current number of sightings.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found out is actually there's probably thousands of sightings occurring each day.
Have you gotten any emails?
I get emails from various researchers, and I'm just trying to figure out how active it really is. But it's very active. I mean, there's constantly stuff going on. A really recent wave of activity is going on in Argentina. In June of 2006, there was a bunch of cattle mutilations, which is really interesting. But what's even more interesting are these two new UFO healing events. As you know, I wrote the book UFO Healings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this guy, Julio Oscar, he's from La Pampa, Argentina, and he was in very bad health because of a long life of, you know, hard farm labor. And he needed a lung operation. He had recently gone leg surgery to repair muscular difficulties. And he was at home watching TV when there was a sudden blackout. And at the same time, a ball of light appeared, about 10 centimeters in diameter. And a few days later, he started to feel really strange and experienced tremors. And he went to bed, and suddenly the same light appeared again. And it went through the window, and it came right over his body and started sort of scanning it. And he had the feeling that he was going to be taken away or something, but he fell asleep and he woke up the next day, and after that his health steadily improved.
Wow. And
before, he couldn't walk without a limp, he was losing weight, he couldn't go but a short distance without losing his breath, and now he's running around and he's getting great health.
That's really amazing.
And get this, this other lady, this is actually one day later in the same city, this 50-year-old woman who, in April, she started to feel intense back pain, and she went to the doctor and was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And she saw another doctor, and the diagnosis was confirmed. At any rate, they were giving her medicines which weren't working, and suddenly, one night, she was at rest in her bedroom, when suddenly she fell into a trance, and this white light filled the room, and she felt herself being picked up and floating towards it. And she had a lapse of consciousness and woke up, and she found herself inside this UFO on a platform. She was being bathed by light. There was five beings around her who were talking all about her health problems. And they actually operated on her, and that's all she really remembers, except waking up the next day.
Does she remember what the beings look like?
Yeah, she said their bodies were kind of bluish in color. They moved very quickly. There was no visible clothing. She couldn't tell if they had any hands or not, but they were using instruments.
Mm.
And since then, her health has been improving very rapidly. So it's just really interesting. I think there's a lot of positive stuff happening out there.
And because of the fact that it was in the same location, I think it's quite, interesting.
Yeah, and just one day later. So, it's very cool. Well, that's our UFO news for today, and so now let's just go on and to our subject for tonight and our guest. The subject tonight is Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, and our guest is Robert Stanley. Robert Stanley is formerly with the Honda Research and Development, but he's currently the editor of Unicus Magazine and the author of this new book, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill. He's been researching UFOs for over 30 years, and actually, I've used some of his research in my own books, and I know he's done research into UFOs over Malibu and that whole area, including underwater UFOs, so that's interesting. And throughout this time, he's interviewed dozens of eyewitnesses and leading experts, and his ongoing investigations into the UFO subject have been featured on numerous television shows across the world and radio, and also in print. He was recently had an article published in Nexus Magazine, based in Australia, about his research here. So let's just get on to our guest. Robert, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Preston. Hi, Christy.
Hi.
How are you guys doing?
Oh, doing great. Great. I'm so glad that you decided to come onto the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And I'm really fascinated to hear your story.
It's not so much my story. I'm just reporting it. I don't want people to think that I had a close encounter, okay? It was something that I've been researching now for about 16 months, based on an email that was forwarded to me by Daryl Sims. And apparently he'd received an email from a photographer, professional photographer in Washington, D.C., stating that he had a close encounter and that he took photographs of the event. And at the time, he didn't realize what he was taking pictures of. I mean, actually, he was there on a commercial assignment. He was shooting an album cover for a local recording artist there in D.C.
Hmm.
And about 12:30 at night, they pulled up. I think it was a Tuesday night. They pulled up and set up their equipment and took pictures in front of the reflecting pool and using the Capitol as a backdrop. And those exposures showed clearly that there was numerous UFOs around the Capitol building. One of them was actually landed on the roof of the Capitol building.
Yeah, now I saw these photos. They're incredible.
Well,
I've never seen anything quite like them, really.
Neither have I, Preston, and apparently nobody else had either. So everybody's got a computer, and most everybody knows how to use Photoshop. I would say that 99% of the people that looked at these things thought it was just a very poorly done Photoshop.
Right.
And for some reason, I continued to research. Actually, what I did was I contacted the photographer almost immediately and just asked him, where did you get these? And he started explaining it to me. And at some point, he made me understand that this really wasn't Photoshop, that he's got the film. He's got negatives of this.
Right. Well, he actually took them to get tested, right?
Right. And that's, if you go to the website at unicusmagazine.com, you can read Chapter 1. And in there, we've got the analysis by an independent film expert there in Washington, D.C. And he said there's no way that those negatives have been tampered with. They're just genuinely exposed. So it's a bit of an issue because, I mean, if a UFO lands anywhere, that's you know, that's a news story. But when they land on a Capitol building roof and literally take over the area for at least 20 minutes.
So when you talked to the photographer, did he express any emotion about what he saw?
Well, at the time, you got to understand, he was very consumed in his work. And he was getting paid very good money to do that work, and it was late at night, and he saw things, but he really didn't, the full impact of it didn't hit him until after he got home and started to think about what had happened, and ultimately a couple of days later when he developed the negatives and saw what was on there, then it started to come back to him, and that's when he really started to feel emotional about the whole experience. Besides that, from what he told me, and it's there in the book, is that this isn't the first time he's had a close encounter. The first time for him was when he was about 4 years old, living on a military base, because his family's all in the military, when he was in England. I think it was near Sculthorpe, which is near Rendlesham.
Wow.
It's a very well-known area for UFO activity.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so this was back in the late 50s, but apparently all throughout the 50s, that area had been a hotbed of activity and continued on into the future. But so it wasn't the first time he had a close encounter, but this was the first time he'd ever caught it on film. Actually, it happened three times to him in about 4 months. It happened July 4th, July 16th, and then again on November, I think it was November 10th.
This was last year?
No, 2002.
Wow.
But like I said, if you go to the website at unicusmagazine.com, you will see not only the photographs, you'll read the story, and I also put up a special section today called bonus images. If you look at that, you'll see some amazing photographs that I found on the internet that people had inadvertently taken at the Capitol that show UFOs over the National Mall, the White House. You know, that whole complex there. You got the Washington Monument, the White House,
right,
the Ellipse, and of course, Capitol Hill. That area is, for some reason, and you could speculate about this all night long, but there are, in my book, there's over 200 eyewitness accounts of UFOs being sighted within a 156-year period in Washington, D.C.
Jeez.
And that's just the ones I could find. I know there's more out there. I know there's a lot of people that never came forward, but, you know, here's what really bugs me about all this, is that during 1952, when this was going on, that was not the first time they were photographed. That was not the first time they were seen or chased over the skies of Washington, D.C. However, that was, as far as we know, the first time that hundreds of people witnessed this event, and many of them took pictures. Some of them even took movie pictures.
Oh, is that right? I've seen the photographs.
You've seen one photograph, Preston, just like everybody else.
Photograph.
There's only one that was released, and even that was an accident. The only reason that got out is because the press person who took it made a copy and sent it to a friend of his who was interested in these kind of things and ultimately leaked the photo. All the rest of the photographs were confiscated by the military.
There's a huge cover-up of the whole Washington, D.C. sighting still then.
Yeah, absolutely. And, in fact, as you'll read in the chapter I put on there, on the website, the photographer's father was a military officer. And he, in 2002, the photographer was working at ABC News at the White House. All right? And when he took those pictures, he didn't know exactly what to do with them. I mean, he did know what to do. The first thing he did was take them to the Capitol Police. And he said, look, this is I took these pictures. You guys should know about this.
Right.
And this was in the 50s?
No, 2002.
2002, okay.
July 16th, exactly 50 years later, okay? Now, there's a lot that went on in the, don't get me wrong. A lot of people think it started in 52 and then it was another blip on the radar in 2002. It's not the case. The first time a UFO was photographed over Washington, D.C. was 1942 over the newly constructed Pentagon.
See, this all makes sense because UFOs are attracted to our most secure installations.
Well, that's true, but they're really interested in Washington, D.C. and the surrounding area. I mean, statistically, that is Larry Hatch runs a website, and he did some analysis, and apparently he came up to the conclusion that Washington, D.C. has the highest ratio of UFO sightings per square mile of any place on the planet.
This is incredible. You just don't hear about this on the news or even in the UFO community for that
matter. No, and like I say, well, here's the problem. A lot of people are scared. Let me get back to the photographer briefly. In 2002, he was working for ABC News. He took these pictures. He didn't tell anybody at ABC at the time, but he did ultimately take these things to his father, who was dying. He was very ill. He'd been exposed to Agent Orange, and he was dying. And the photographer showed his father these pictures, and his father got very upset with him and said, "Don't ever show these photographs to anyone." Now, if his father had lived longer, let's say another few years, we would not have seen these photographs today.
Wow.
They would literally be locked up because that was what he ordered his son to do. Now, the photographer is not in the military, but he loved and respected his father, who's now deceased, unfortunately. And like I said, if he'd lived longer, he would have ordered his son not to show those, especially not give it to the media.
I wonder why.
Well, it's because it's part of the...
You think it's...
It's the method of operation for the military, okay? It's called plausible deniability. They don't want it to answer questions for something like this.
Uh-huh.
And I was told the same thing from other people that live and work in Washington, D.C., that are prominent players there within the Beltway. And I was told with no uncertain terms that nobody was going to come forward and address this issue because none of them want to be held accountable for this.
Right. Do you think any of these UFOs could be the secret government or...
Good,
you know,
question.
What I mean, ours?
Well, it's possible that during the past 156 years that some of that stuff could have been ours, but that would be foolish to keep displaying it over a populated area. I mean, this isn't some backwater, boonie. We're talking about a very heavily populated area that is, for most intents and purposes, there's military bases everywhere around that area too. And there's media there all the time. So it just wouldn't make any sense to be testing or flying things that are unconventional aircraft that we've built secretly, and then you just keep throwing them up. And not only that, you got to realize the restricted airspace is one thing, but then you've got another level of prohibited airspace where nothing is supposed to be flying through there unless it's got permission. So,
right.
You know, what is it? We're making these ultra top secret and highly advanced. I mean, Preston, they're so advanced, these things can literally warp space. We've got pictures. This is what's so amazing about these pictures. The final image was a 3.5-minute exposure, and on that image, you can literally see a group of four UFOs jumping across the sky like pulses. They literally moved in pulses, three pulses, and into a wormhole and disappeared.
Wow. Yeah, I saw the photograph. It's
wild. I mean, it took me months to understand. In fact, it's even taken the photographer, it's taken him years of analysis to appreciate what he captured on film because no one's ever seen pictures like this before. Well, I think the military might have some. In fact, I'm sure that's why they confiscated those pictures, is because all their stupid explanations about temperature inversion layers, reflections of lights off buildings, all that stuff would have to just be thrown aside once you look at the actual pictures.
It makes me wonder that when people take pictures, if they actually physically see the picture or they find it later in the dark room. You know,
typically, they don't see it at the time. I have many, many instances of that occurring and that I've chronicled in the book. In fact, 2 months after the photographer took his pictures in front of the Capitol building, 2 months later, a group of five friends showed up at the Capitol building at 9 o'clock at night. And one of the individuals was the wife of a minister. She wanted a picture of the Capitol at night. She walked over, and she took a picture of the Capitol. Later, when they went home and they downloaded the images, they noticed that there was this odd-looking light over the dome. And as they zoomed in on it, they realized it was a disc-shaped UFO glowing brightly in the night. Now, I only know about that because the person put that on a website, but he is really funny. This now, from coming from a minister, he says, I'm not going to put this on the Internet because I think this actually might be worth some money.
Yeah.
Wow.
Can you imagine all the tourists that go over there and take pictures? How many of them have UFOs on their pictures?
Quite a few of them, and from what I understand, and that's why I said it was really amazing to me when I started looking, I found these people didn't even, some of them didn't know even what they captured. Like this one kid, when you go to the bonus images section on my website, you'll see the first picture there was taken in early 2006 by an eighth grader that was on a field trip to Washington, D.C. He took a bunch of pictures, and on one of these images, there's at least five UFOs over the Capitol.
This is amazing. Now, my question would be, why are the UFOs putting on a display? Are they trying to be noticed? What's going on?
Yeah, obviously. I interviewed quite a few people over the years, and I used a lot of that information in the first half of the book. And one of the people that I really highly respect is Commander Robert Dean, and his forthrightness on this issue is just astonishing, because he said that what he saw at NATO, the assessment that he saw in 1963, stated that the military already understood and knew quite well that there are at least four races of ETs visiting this planet, and that one of them in particular worried them quite a bit because they were totally human.
Right, right.
You know, they didn't say that this was some secret thing, that these guys were here, just a covert group that somehow stumbled on this. No, they said these guys were extraterrestrial humans. And what worried them most was that because they are human, they can live secretly among us.
Yeah.
And so, of course, you know.
Which I'm sure is true.
It is true. But again, it's very shocking for us to even accept this as a fact. And, of course, there's a lot of different types of beings that would stand out if they were to try and live among us. So I do think that they come covertly. In fact, one of the instances I reported in there was by a security guard. I think it was 3 a.m. in the morning. He was doing security somewhere in the Capitol. And he saw a shadowy alien being standing floating kind of in the an alleyway. And he just said it scared the heck out of him. But, he watched this thing, and then he said it just turned slightly and just disappeared. Now, I don't think he went into another dimension. The reason I'm mentioning this at all is because they do have optical stealth technology, and I suppose they've had it for a long time. So I'm not trying to scare anybody, but the fact of the matter is that these things can literally be right in front of you, and you wouldn't see it. That's the weirdest part of it all. And I know people who are skeptical are going to say, how convenient for you. Invisible UFOs, right? Yeah, sure. But sometimes these things literally do show up on film, even when they're cloaked. Sometimes they are not showing up on radar, and yet you can see them. So
camera is, like, what, really fast, the shutter speed?
It's not just that, Christy. It's the fact that especially if you're using film, unlike a lot of people now are using digital stuff, but film is much more sensitive to the electromagnetic radiation that's in the environment, much more so than our eyes. So it absorbs quite a bit of the photons that are just floating around.
Right.
And it can literally see things that we don't with our eyes.
Oh, that's really interesting.
It's been my experience that UFOs pretty much always know when they're being filmed. I mean, I'm not sure that that's true, but
they know
a lot of cases like that.
You're right, Preston. They know when they're being filmed. They know everything that we're doing. that's another thing that worries people is that to feel. I used to say I feel like I'm in Uncle Milty's ant farm, because that's the way they're sort of looking at us as primitive little species running around, sort of still got our heads underground, not really looking up and seeing what's going on. And they are watching us, definitely. And sometimes they interact with us. And when they do, most of us freak out.
Have you had any interviews with people that have had interactions with ETs?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, one of the guys I interviewed claims he is one of the human ETs that was put here back in the 50s.
Wow.
So, and I had a hard time believing that, especially when I met him at a NBC studio. We were doing a television show, and they introduced him as an extraterrestrial. I'm like, yeah, right. He just looks so normal, right? But after I got to know him better over the years, I realized he wasn't. He was totally sincere. He is totally sincere about this. And, it like I said, it started to make sense to me. But again, it's going to take quite a while before the average person who knows nothing about this is going to come to grips with the fact that we're not alone.
To say the least.
Personal experience is like the best proof of all. And even then, there's that denial.
Well, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal with Preston Dennett and Christy Kitsara Dennett. Our guest tonight is Robert Stanley. We're talking about Close Encounters on Capitol Hill. This book is really amazing. I mean, you're a great writer, but it's explosive information. I consider myself pretty well informed about what's going on. And I really had no idea it was this intense.
I had no idea either, Preston. Like I said, it was shocking, and it continues to be shocking. And if you go to the website at unicusmagazine.com, it's spelled UNICUS magazine.com, and you look at the bonus images, one of the things you're going to see on there is a picture of a black helicopter hovering over my house. That happened on July 6th of last year. The reason that happened is because I called the Capitol Police, and I had a conversation with the public relations officer. He wanted to know my name, where I'm calling from, what do I really want, am I going to, if I'm going to publish this, where is it going to be published and when?
They have to be aware of what's going on.
Oh, absolutely they are, but, the photographer is still, we're still negotiating with the Capitol Police. He has given them a lot of information based on the analysis of the photographs. He's a very patriotic individual. I mean, come on, you work at the White House for 8 years, you get to know people. And, I mean, he's lived in Washington, D.C., worked there for many years, so he knows how things work. And the Capitol Police were stunned. I mean, they really didn't know what to make of it. But I can tell you quite honestly, they weren't prepared for this. And what I was told through the photographer is that this wasn't the first time that they have landed on Capitol Hill. At least that picture, that it proves that they have done so in 2002, but the Capitol Police officers were really unprepared in 2002, and they are trying to be prepared in the future because they know it's going to happen again.
Right. Well, I was going over the 1952 incident, and when that happened, no one was at all prepared. I mean, the Pentagon found out through the newspapers. People were running around. They weren't even able to react.
Well, their reaction was this. They had military on the ground, active duty people with anti-aircraft weapons. Truman, I think, was it? He issued a shoot-on-site order at one point.
Right. That was like this after several hours, though, right?
Yeah, but they were there. On some nights, they were there for 6 hours straight. I mean, we don't know how many hours they were there the night of July 16th. All we know is the photographer was there for about a half an hour shooting pictures. And clearly they were there for at least that long.
And why do you think they're doing this? Why are they hovering over the Capitol like this? Is it a display of power? Or?
Commander Dean seemed to think that was part of it. Again, that wasn't his personal assessment. That was NATO's assessment based on they hired some of the best and brightest minds of the day to analyze the situation for them. And that was what the top secret assessment said. Sometimes they do flyovers just to get our attention, which ultimately leads to landings and contacts. Well, that makes sense, obviously. I mean, we haven't put out the welcome mat, obviously.
No, we shoot at them each time.
Not every time, and especially not over D.C. They better not be shooting at them every time because there's consequences to that.
Right.
Okay, I mean, literally, the immediate thing is this. Most people don't realize this, but UFOs do emit radiation.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of radiation, and that's been proven over time. There's many, many cases.
Hundreds.
Yeah, of people and plants and things being burned, and even it registers on Geiger counters. before, during, and after. So these things are really powerful, and blowing one up or trying to shoot one down, you're asking for serious trouble.
Right. All the government UFO experts are nuclear physicists, and most people who are on the UFO problem are definitely.
Yeah.
It's all about nuclear power.
I suppose. Either that, it could be even greater than what we consider to be nuclear. I really think it is, but I don't want to get into the technical details. I do discuss that in depth in some of the chapters of these interviews that I did with people.
Well, you've interviewed a lot of people. Wendell Stevens.
Yeah. David Adair.
Big guys.
David Adair is a very interesting character. He knew quite a bit about some of this stuff.
Now, he's the guy who invented the new propulsion or something?
Well, the reason he was able to build a fusion-powered rocket before anybody else on the planet was because he had had contact when he was a child. This led to reoccurring dreams where they would literally give him technical information, because to them this is child's play. And they wanted us to upgrade at some point and become part of the community, but we're not making it easy. We're really not. We're very resistant. Not all of us. I'm just saying, especially the leadership, feel threatened by all this.
Right. So what about Bush and the whole Bush administration? How do you think, what's their take on all this UFO activity over the Capitol?
Silence. And believe me, the photographer did send a package to the White House. I know a lot of people send stuff to the White House, but he, having worked there, he knew exactly who to send it to. Okay, so I know it went to the White House. I know it went to the Pentagon. I know the Capitol Police have quite a bit of that information, and they passed it on to their superiors, which is a three-letter agency.
Well, they take the subject really seriously. So
You better believe it, because... Yeah, they don't want anybody flying in that airspace, especially after 9/11, and then again, the security got even tighter when we invaded Iraq in 2003. The prohibitions of flight in that area are some of the tightest in the country, if not the world. And yet, there have been thousands of incursions of prohibited and restricted airspace just since 9/11.
Well, this your book, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, it's going to definitely shake some people up.
Yeah, I suppose. Like I said, they sent that. I kind of dismissed the whole black helicopter thing there for a while. I really, you know, because I never seen a picture of one. I never really met anybody who, seen one directly. My God, I just released the first article in Nexus. I put it on my website, but I gave it to Duncan Rhodes at Nexus because he's got a huge circulation. It's not just Australia. It's like I think he's in 12 different countries now.
Oh, yeah, they're all over newsstands here. So.
Yeah, well, Canada, Japan, parts of Russia. I'm just saying he's really well distributed. So I wanted the information to get out, and I let him publish it, and I posted it on my website. And then next thing I know, I'm starting to write the book, and then 6 o'clock in the afternoon, here comes this helicopter, and which is not unusual, but, man, it circled over my house. It was so low and so loud, it was shaking my entire house. And I'm trying to work, so I walk out there, and I looked at this thing, and I couldn't believe it. I absolutely, my mouth was open. I was looking at this thing just going, what in the heck are they doing?
Seen one of those before in Topanga Canyon.
Well, it's totally, I mean, at least I was able to get their picture. Before they left, I ran in the house, and I got a camera. Took two pictures.
That's good.
But the funny thing is, not only is it totally unmarked, they were flying below 300 feet.
That's illegal, right?
Yes, it's illegal. Yeah, you're not supposed to be doing that. So they obviously have permission from some authority to do that. And I don't know, I don't know how many other people have experienced something like that, but my God, I'll never forget it. I hope they don't pull a stunt like that on me anytime soon again. But
oh, hundreds of people. I mean, the abductees experience that a lot, and UFO researchers definitely.
I've heard this. Okay, I've heard of it. But like I say, it's sort of like something that I figured was maybe people were just exaggerating or didn't understand. A military exercise was ongoing or something. I just, it's just not something that I really paid much attention to until it happened to me. And
so
now I know. Now I know for a fact they exist.
Have you experienced any government interference besides that? Or
No. And as a matter of fact, I think if anything, this is actually going to help them. What I'm doing is beneficial to, because they have to break the news to people at some point.
Right.
You know, they don't want mass panic to ensue when these things show up again. Because then it's my understanding they're not going to stop showing up. And they really like something. There's something about D.C. We could speculate about it for a long time here, but there is something about D.C. and the surrounding area that makes it the hottest hotspot for UFOs on the planet. And I kind of sense what's going to happen is this. During the next election cycle, specifically summer of next year, there's a lot of people that are going to see UFOs on the National Mall. A lot of them are going to take pictures, and I defy the military to try and go around confiscating everybody's film at that point. It isn't going to work. Because the way things, everybody's so connected now, they're going to have cell phones, they're going to download this stuff immediately. And more than that, there's people who, after they read the book and see this, the photographer's DVD, they're going to be waiting. They're going to want to get pictures of their own. They may even want to have a close encounter of their own on Capitol Hill.
Wow, wow.
And so, like I say, you know, the Capitol Police are trying to prepare for this. That this, their main job is not only security inside the building, but the complex surrounding it.
But I think it's a really amazing statement that the UFOs are coming over the Capitol. And
I know, because this is what skeptics always say. Why don't they land on the White House lawn? And apparently they are.
Well, yeah. One of the pictures that I found on the Internet was taken right next to the White House in the ellipse. You might remember that from the famous movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Uh-huh.
Right.
The ellipse is right between the Washington Monument and the White House. A professional photographer was there in December of 2004 taking pictures of the recently lit menorah. And she caught three images of two blue UFOs ascending over the sky directly over the ellipse, which, like I said, it's literally the back door of the White House.
Jeez, this is just the tip of the iceberg of what we're seeing.
Oh, my God. Right? Well, that is for sure. I would love to see.
It would be so fascinating to know, you know, if it's the same kind of UFO or if there's different, you know, sightings of UFOs, different UFOs going over the Capitol. I mean, that's like a whole other research.
It's hard to say.
Yeah, I wonder who it is. I mean, is it the Greys, the Pleiadians?
I'm just guessing now, but I'm sure it's not just one group that's doing this. From everything that I understand about this phenomenon is that there's a federation, and that doesn't mean that they're all good. In fact, I think there's the federation of planets, the free world, is at odds with something that in Star Wars they called it the Empire.
Right.
Okay. I do believe that that's what's going on here, and that's another reason that we're being sort of shut out. Is that there is an evil component to all of this as well. It's not all airy-fairy love and light stuff. There's a real serious side to this that I hesitate to even mention it, but I just think it would be negligent of me not to. And
do you come to this conclusion because of your investigations?
Say that again?
Do you come to this conclusion because of your investigations?
Well, it's not just my investigation. It's the work of many other people that have exposed some of the dealings that are going on there in Washington, D.C. with these secret societies.
Oh, I see.
And they are definitely a factor. And, you know, there's something called the Logan Act, and it states that you, as a public official, an elected public official, is not allowed to have private meetings with other individuals about public policy. Now,
right.
You could assume that people like the Masons that meet, these high-level politicians that are Masons, when they meet as Masons, you could assume that they do not discuss public policy. But how would we know that? Because all their meetings are behind closed doors. They're never monitored by any outside individuals.
So is this the MJ-12 type group, you think?
Well, I mean, the Masons are a secret society, and they state so. That is just as part of their charter. You know, that when they have meetings, outsiders are not allowed in. In fact, they have armed guards at the door there. It's not just symbolic. They want to keep those secrets to themselves. One of them is that they are in contact with ETs.
And that's just what I was going to ask. I mean, maybe the Bush administration is fully aware and are inviting these UFOs down.
Well, before Colonel Corso died, he wrote a second book.
Oh, really?
Yes, he did. And it was published, I believe, according to Commander Dean, he told me it was published in Italy.
Wow.
Unfortunately, as soon as he passed away, all his property went to his son. His son was then approached by a very powerful group, clandestine group, that threatened him. And they made him an offer he could not refuse. I mean, what would you do if somebody threatened you and your family?
All right. Well, this is that same MJ-12 group, I think.
That was never made clear to me. All I know is that they're very powerful. They made him a very wealthy man. He's still above ground, as far as I know. But the book will never see the light of day. In fact, he called the publisher who had the books printed in Italian in a warehouse, and he said, if any of those books are made public, you're going straight to jail.
Jeez, do you know what's in the book? Any idea?
Yeah. Yes, I do. I have a very good idea. It's all about the collaboration of a group of very nasty extraterrestrials with the secret societies here on this planet.
Oh, so this is like the whole John Lear story where they the government
This was not a validation of other people's claims. It's what Colonel Corso found out personally, and it upset him greatly. It really did, and he knew he couldn't get that book published here in the United States. That's why he went and did it outside the United States. But I think even if he had been alive, I don't think it would have been published. I think they would have made sure he was silenced or something. I just know that that book, it spilled too many beans. It really exposed things for what they really are.
Jesus.
It's another reason we can't have open contact with good ETs, is because the bad guys have already cut a deal with our current covert leadership.
And what's the deal? Where they exchange technology for abduction, right?
Well, that's a theory. We'll never know because the book isn't coming out. And if Corso did tell Commander Dean all the details, Commander Dean did not want to relay all that to me because he knew that I was writing a book. He wanted to give me an update, but he didn't want to give out all the details because he considers me a friend and he didn't want to put me in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm. Boy, this UFO situation is so explosive. I mean, it's so changeable.
Yeah, it's a real hot potato, and
everything will get exposed.
I don't know that everything will ever be exposed because there's so many control mechanisms set in place. There's just no way for anybody to get access to all the information. It really is compartmentalized.
Well, this is a photographer. Is he still having encounters?
I shouldn't say that. Not so much. Not since 2002. I'll tell you what.
It's all part of the ET agenda and your book, even, to getting this information out.
Yeah, I do think that they were actually working with him. I'm almost positive that he thought it was his idea to go to the Capitol at night, but he'd already taken pictures on July 4th of them over the Washington Monument.
July 4th, these aren't firecrackers?
Yeah. No, these are not fire. Yes, there's fireworks in the background, but these are definitely not fireworks. Some of these things that are in the sky are just UFOs. And you can say, you know, here's the thing. The photographer was using top-of-the-line photographic equipment. Then he would take the negatives and scan it directly into a computer at 4,000 DPI. So we've got ultra-high-resolution nighttime photographs here, stuff that's never been seen before.
Wow.
And that's another reason why people didn't know what to make of it, and they just figured, oh, it's Photoshop. This can't be real. You talk about the spheres of light. I know a lot of people have caught pictures of weird spheres. I think a lot of those are actually just glitches in the camera. Some of them are clearly not. They really are artificial constructs, most likely extraterrestrial. But what really amazed me was that on November of 2002, the photographer was taking a picture of a model standing on a street corner in Washington, D.C., and above her head is this thing that's about the size of a gumball floating over her head, and it's a tiny sphere. And it's definitely metallic. It's reflective. And it was only there for a brief second, then it flew off at a tremendous speed. And
no one saw it at the time?
He briefly saw it. I mean, again, he was trying to take a commercial photograph.
Right.
You know, but he did see this speck of light, and he thought, that's weird. And I think that the negatives are amazing, and the at least the analysis of them by the independent film experts said, my God, this thing, the energy coming off of this thing is incredible. Because he said it was real hot. It had to be very hot. in order for it to register that color on the film.
Wow.
And it was really close, too. I mean, Christ, that sphere was, the lady was maybe, what, like 5 feet away from him? It was right over
her
head.
I saw the photo. This Pardon? Place is just crawling with UFOs.
Well, yeah, and I mean, see, this is the thing. I didn't know what was going on in D.C., and I never would have even looked into it if I hadn't met this photographer. And then I started, his story by itself is fascinating. It really is, it's just phenomenal. But when you start adding in all the other stuff that people have seen and photographed and experienced right there in that one location, and like I said, I've only got 156 years of history right there in D.C., but the surrounding area is just a hotbed, too. And there's been a lot of landings and things being shot at. You know, the first time they tried to intercept the UFOs over Washington was 1948. That's way before 1952.
Right.
And like I said, it didn't just stop in 48. It kept going. So they were expecting something to happen by, you know, that time. But we're not on an equal footing here. It's not a level playing field that we have with these beings and their technology. Because this is the thing that really upset Corso. He felt he was being used like a pawn on a chessboard. And then he felt towards the end of his life, he realized that they had the ability to manipulate time and space.
Yeah, I believe that.
Well, but then, I mean, come on, it's really hard for us to even conceive of that, let alone deal with that as a fact. If they can do that, they literally know who we are in the future. And that way they can affect us as children so that we will do certain things in the future. I mean, they think about that. It's not a pleasant thought, especially if some of these guys are bad news and they've got that ability, then that doesn't bode well for us.
No, it doesn't.
I'm glad that there's the possibility of good things, too.
Well, of course there is. No, yes, of course there is good ETs. But, you know, I don't know. I think their hands are tied to some degree. I don't think look what would happen if they just showed up uninvited. If they said, we're here to help you, most people aren't going to feel that way at all.
No.
They're not going to believe them. They're going to think, oh, Christ, this is an invasion. In other words, we're going to project all our insecurities onto them.
Right, so open contact is not probably going to happen that soon, huh?
Well,
we're getting exposed more and more, like you mentioned, because of you know, our technology and everything. There's a lot more public experience.
Well, shoot, they're right over the White House now. I mean, this is not, exposure or whatever you call it. Disclosure, what is?
official disclosure probably will never come. It will more be like an apology after the fact. I think we have an opportunity coming up here in the future to actually initiate contact without getting permission from the politicians or the military.
Right. Well, lots of UFO groups are doing it. I mean,
loosely, but there's something that I'm promoting. I actually think we need to have a concert like Woodstock, but not to protest the war. I think what I'm actively promoting is a cosmic concert where people gather, not only physically, but online, virtually, where they literally are going to vote whether or not we should invite extraterrestrials to visit this world or not. It's never been done before.
No, that's a great idea.
It is. I'll be a supporter.
Thank you. All it takes is just a moment to make up your mind whether you want that or not. And believe me, it'll all be registered on a website so we can see the real-time total. But I know they're watching us. And they are hoping that at some point we're going to recognize the fact that we have a say in this relationship. If somebody comes up to your door uninvited, you're probably not going to be too receptive to whatever they have to say or do with you.
Right.
But if you invite somebody up to your door and they show up, well, that's a different story. There's a whole lot more room for all kinds of good things to happen.
Well, I think everyone knows UFOs are real at this point. At least they've heard of them.
Oh, well, certainly.
Whether they believe it or not, I mean, they're here, I think.
Well, here's a good point, Preston. Ignoring the situation, especially in D.C., is not going to make them go away.
Well, the government never discloses anything unless we force their hand, basically.
Well, then they're not going to. It's not in their nature. It's not how they operate. I believe me, I beat my head against that wall for so many months until I realized this is not the way to go. That's why I'm offering a solution. I don't like to talk about situations that are problematic unless I can offer some solution to that same problem. I'm not saying everybody's going to, you know, like it, but at least let's get a dialogue going here to acknowledge, hey, we've got a problem. Now what?
It's a great idea. I mean, I think, you know, UFOs are going to show up and not go away one of these days. I mean, the Phoenix lights and all this stuff is really escalating.
Well, I don't think they want, the good guys really don't want us to panic. They really, and you know, some of these craft are enormous. And I was shocked when I read some of the reports that people right over D.C. and Baltimore. I mean, these things were up there for hours. In fact, the military jets that were sent to intercept, those pilots were really glad that they couldn't get high enough to intercept because it's like Independence Day. These things were like floating cities, humongous things in the sky that there's no way their little tiny little jets could have an effect on them. It would be a suicide mission, you know? So I understand the military's position. I know there's a lot of good people in the military, and I'm sure there's some good people that are still politicians, although I think most of them, unfortunately, have been corrupted by the system.
Yes, unfortunately.
But, you know, hey, it doesn't mean we are helpless to do something about this. And, you know, so I appreciate you guys having me on so we could at least discuss it. And
oh, it's our pleasure, believe me. I think the UFOs are kind of doing also a grassroots movement. I mean, they went to the politicians, they went to the leaders, it didn't work, so they're going to people like the photographer.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. And obviously this is, like I said, they're not going to just give up on us because we're not responding yet. I mean, most of these beings, my understanding is they're very long lived compared to us. They tend to, you know, they live a more healthier, longer life. So, and their history is more intact than ours. And they tend to be, at least the benevolent ones, tend to be very nurturing. From everything that I've heard from people who have had interaction with them,
right?
They get a feeling of loving, peaceful type of society that these beings live in. And they're trying to, if they're going to have an interaction with us, they're going to want it to be on their terms to some degree. I don't see how it could be otherwise. You know, they can't come down here and start behaving like we do. That would just be weird. You know, they're going to be who they are, no matter where they are. They're always going to represent themselves and their society. And, you know, our society could probably benefit greatly from the model that they are apparently using for their society, at least what I understand about this so-called Federation of Planets.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Just in this galaxy alone, there's allegedly thousands of different planets that are united under a peaceful banner.
Jeez, there's just so much going on, people have no idea.
Well, if anybody wanted to contact you or share information,
or get your book,
we're contactees.
Through the website, that's the best way. It's unicusmagazine.com. There's a link to my email there that goes directly to me. The book itself is not going to be published till next month. But I think it's worth the wait. It's actually going to even have a free CD of images with it because I really want people to see what's going on there for themselves. And the photographer's put together a DVD that's phenomenal, but that's not quite ready yet either.
Oh, that would be so wonderful.
Well,
I expect there will be a big reaction to the book. I mean, I'm sure you'll get lots more photographs coming in at least.
And it's definitely going to support your effort to try and get, you know, the news out.
Thank you. I think we're all going to benefit from it. I'm really pleased that the way things are coming together. All I got to tell you though, it's been really frustrating, especially the way the media has turned a blind eye. And in fact, most of the UFO researchers thought this was all a hoax.
Huh.
So you know,
that's amazing. Even the UFO community.
Yeah, especially coming from the UFO community, that really made me angry. I was like, wait a minute, you guys. You're not even listening.
Have you contacted other, like, mainstream media? And
oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, so did the photographer. I mean, come on. He worked for ABC News for 18 years.
Right.
And, of course, they were one of the first media outlets that he contacted. After his father died, he walked away from his job. He was just devastated and had to reevaluate his whole life. And
well, there's a whole news blackout on this subject. It's just...
Sorry?
There's a news blackout on the whole UFO subject?
Well, here's the thing. The media, the mainstream media, is the fourth estate. It's the unelected fourth branch of government. And all of those people have to toe the party line to some degree. Otherwise, the FCC will yank down their license. In other words, there is leverage. There's leverage that the government can apply to the media. Even though we do have the First Amendment, that can be circumvented through these other channels. So anybody who wants to keep their job or their broadcasting license, they had better toe the party line.
Yeah.
Well, I think if people really want to find out, they're going to find out.
Yeah, well, because of
the talk internet.
Yes, because of talk radio and the internet. You're right. It has changed everything. You know, it started in the 50s with satellites. And at that time, a wise man named Marshall McLuhan said, wow, we've got a global village now. But it was still in its infancy 50-something years ago. Now we're sort of, I would say we're sort of in our adolescence, teenage years. And we're as wonderful as the internet is, you know what most people do with it. It's not for good purposes. I mean, it has a potential, a much greater potential to help enlighten mankind. But, you know, some people are just abusing it for spam and all kinds of other stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, once we start to get people aware of the fact that this is going on, more and more people are going to come up and speak out and show their own photographs. And I just don't see how you can contain this forever, really.
Well, definitely. I mean, just the tourists alone would have photographs, like I was saying.
This is all happening over Washington, D.C. I wonder about other countries, too, and their capitals.
You know, that's odd you should say that. I did, when I was looking on the internet, I did find one other photograph was taken at night over the Capitol building in, I think it was Vancouver. And, the guy didn't, you know, he's a professional photographer taking pictures at night, more for artistic purposes than anything else, because he was up late. And there you go. I mean, I may include that one just to show people, yeah, it does happen in other places. For all we know, they could be attracted to places that we consider to be powerful.
Well, whatever is happening, they're definitely sending a message of some kind.
Well, D.C. itself, if you ever look at a satellite photograph of D.C., it's very interesting because the geometry, the grid that's laid out there was all done intentionally, and it's something you can only see from a great distance above. And that may be one of the factors, kind of like a modern-day Nazca line, but I don't think that's the only thing that's drawing them there. I really don't.
Huh.
It's just another aspect of the city. Unless you actually studied it and look at it, you'd never know. It's highly unique. I mean, I've never seen any other city planned it and engineered quite the same way.
Well, this is exciting. I mean, it seems to me like they're working towards the disclosing themselves officially, the UFOs. I mean, else hover over Washington, D.C.? I mean,
yeah, it would make sense. It would make sense, but obviously, you guys know, not the only. They've been seen all over the planet, right? But why they're attracted to D.C. repeatedly, I guess you'd have to say it's because it is the seat of power, at least for
the world, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, hey, if you consider America a superpower, then the heart of that is D.C. You know, so that it kind of does make sense. And I don't expect anybody in an official capacity to come forward, but I know they've had contact. I mean, this is what Commander Dean told me. Some of these guys have had contact, and it just messed them up. It messed them up because their whole mindset, they had to rethink everything.
Wow. Well, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. Our guest tonight is Robert Stanley. He's the author of Close Encounters on Capitol Hill. So we're pretty much going to have to wrap it up soon. We've got another minute or so. So is there anything you want to give a final message about?
Yeah, I just want to encourage people to be sure that they go and read at least the first chapter and look at some of the photographs that I posted on my website, which is unicusmagazine.com. Unicus is spelled UNICUS magazine.com. And it's just, there's a lot of free stuff there that you can look at. And if you want to send me an email and just make sure that I reserve you a copy of the book, because I'm publishing this myself, and it's going to be, I'm not going to have you know, extra copies for the first run. So
right.
You know how that goes. It's just something I'm...
Well, I expect it'll do really well. I mean, from the excerpt that I read, I mean, it was really just mind-blowing, really.
Yeah, I'm still feeling that. I'm still feeling that. I have been surprised by this story month after month, day after day, hour by hour. I swear to you, this is the weirdest, most bizarre, exciting story I've ever covered.
And the photos are all in color, too. I mean, people have to check these photos out.
I'm really excited. I'm going to read the book.
Thanks. Yeah, well, I hope you enjoy it. It's been a labor of love. I don't know if I'm ever going to write another book, at least not as long as this one, because it just kept growing. I mean, it's up to like 400 pages now. I'm like,
wow.
I don't know how to cut any of it. Anyway, it's going to get out there next month, and hopefully people will take a little bit of time to analyze the information and start considering all the implications of this phenomenon. It's not going to go away. Like I said, it's been here, and it's here now, and it'll be here in the future. So it's incumbent upon us to start acting responsibly towards these beings. If we really want to have a relationship with them, we are in a position to do so. But if we don't welcome them here, they're going to continue, you know, sneaking around covertly. And I don't think that's really going to help us in the long run.
Well, you've really inspired me.
Thank you.
I totally want to initiate contact.
Well, believe it or not, you may have actually met an extraterrestrial and didn't even know it. That's what I find most interesting is that we have no idea how many human extraterrestrials are living here.
Okay, well, our time is up.
Okay.
I want to thank you, Robert, very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Christy. Thanks, Preston. You guys take care.
All right. Thank you all for listening to UFOs and the Paranormal with Preston Dennett and Christine Kisara Dennett. Our guest tonight has been Robert Stanley, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill. And next week, our guest will be Bill Green, Sasquatch researcher. So thank you all. I'll see you next week.